Maybe I'll see if there's any questions right now. Have you got your pen up, Adversity? You have to, right?
Well, I guess it's something else. It's more like a reflection.
Yeah.
Because the image you gave yesterday afternoon of the stage with the actors and the director's chair,
mm-hmm.
I've sort of been reflecting on that sense of sometimes finding a more helpful actor to take the director's chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that resonates a bit with what you were saying, in the way that I'm trying to train myself more and more to see the world a bit more like it could be, even if I can't totally see it yet. Mm. But I'm using the actors that I've got available.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you can find a director who's got a more kind of enjoyable and positive script that they're sitting there with.
Yeah, something like that. Which could be my Vidan or.
Yeah. Again, it helps to come back to that sort of Yogacara view that we were looking at yesterday afternoon, where to become aware that all our experience is our experience. So it's all an experience of mind. And that gives us far more... It makes us aware of how decisive for our experience mind obviously is. Yeah. Most of the time we're feeling as if, well, there's the world out there and we only have kind of limited influence on it. But if everything is our experience, then our attitudes and our story and so forth, they're absolutely crucial to how we experience. Absolutely crucial. Any other Mokshdakini?
I have three quite strong memories of doing my sadhana practice, and which is Vajrayogini, and going very skyward and getting very split from my experience. So I'm quite afraid to do my sadhana now.
Mm-hmm. I do, but let's maybe talk about that one-to-one, because that would sort of take us quite a long way from spiritual rebirth relating to just sitting. Dharma Vandana?
I may have misheard you, but I thought you said something to the effect that, you know, enlightenment being possible was miraculous. And I don't know if I'm missing a point, but it doesn't seem to be miraculous. It seems to be possible. I'm wondering if I'm being dense just extraordinary things happen.
Yeah.
Every day, I guess, all of us experience sort of extraordinary synchronicity and obviously difficulties and all the other things.
Every day we all experience extraordinary things, but most of the time we don't realise they're extraordinary.
Mm.
If you see what I mean. Because we take things for granted.
Or I think maybe from my point of view, then, if I think of enlightenment as miraculous, it doesn't feel accessible.
Yeah, it can. It's both, from one point of view, completely natural. It's just what happens when we stop clinging. But on the other side, from within a rather limited ego-based view of life, it does seem quite miraculous. That's maybe all I was saying. Yeah.
It might seem it,
yeah.
I can feel like a real heart response. You're talking about mystery and miraculous, and I have such a strong materialist tendency. How do I stay up there? How do I cultivate that openness?
Well, partly by staying with that heart response and carrying on noticing it. I mean, it must say something about the nature of things that we do have these heart responses to things. They're not sort of arbitrary. There's a reason why they feel so deep and so central to us. And that says something about the nature of how things are. So, when we, any world view that kind of completely leaves out what intuitively, emotionally, almost, and in our body, all feels like something very important. Can't be the whole story somehow. The difficulty is partly that we tend to be brought up to live with the rational, and it's a wonderful faculty, but it sort of tends to take over. It tends to want to control everything, and part of spiritual life is that it is our rational faculty discovering that it has to power share with our heart and our intuition and our body. But it's not a question of sort of dismissing the rational, or that's going to the other extreme. But there is a reason why there is this sort of deep heart response to some things. That is a faculty in us. We have an intuitive faculty, we have an emotional faculty, and they can reach to truth. The rational is very helpful in taking us part of the path, but yeah. We need a vision of how things are that somehow includes those. And it's not just, subjective, that it is actually, it's saying something about the nature of reality. It's about the best I can do, I think. Right now. Ah, Sioux City.
I don't exactly know what the question is, but it seems that each day has been augmented.
And in the practice, it feels like everything sits really well, like being embodied and the open heart, and dropping the labelling. And I can experience it kind of decentralising with my awareness. So I'm in the present, not labelling. And I can experience all the coughing as awareness arises from the coughing. It's really useful, all the coughing.
Yeah.
So there's always awareness arising.
Mm.
And then, because there's a kind of gap then, you know, between rebirth. You know.
Between?
Well, suddenly you have rebirth. And how do you get from this sort of decentralized awareness to rebirth? You know, where, at that point, what else, what do we do? Do we just sit with the kind of broad awareness? Is there anything else we can bring to the practice at that point?
Are you talking about, you're talking about rebirth after death?
Well, just, I don't, like, what do we do? Do we just sit with that? You know, cause basically, even if I have this field of awareness with metta in it, there's still this kind of self.
Still this?
There's still an experience of something self, the selfing process. And it's just like, what's the kind of next untangling of that, or you just keep sitting with it.
If you can really manage to be just a big open field of metta full awareness, then okay, within that, you know, bits of, you know, selfing and opening and closing, they go on. But you're not identifying with them. And so they, when you're not identified with them, you're not giving them any momentum. So they carry on appearing because, you know, there's all that sort of karmic force behind them. But it's a bit like a kid's playground, a kid's carousel in a playground. Yeah, you kind of push it and it kind of gathers momentum. And you push it and it gathers momentum. Then you stop pushing it and it just kind of runs down. It's like if we're not constantly stirring up the cock, the snake and the pig, you know, in the centre of the wheel of life, so they keep on sort of biting harder into one another's tails and sort of driving one another forward. After a while, their kind of mad dance just sort of slows down and stops and they just kind of wander off. So, yeah, if we're really not giving any momentum to these things, if we really are just, so to speak, identified with awareness, and whatever's all the appearances of awareness, they're all held with a loving awareness, then everything takes care of itself, really. And rebirth, well, let's not worry about rebirth, but let's say at the time of death, well, at the time of death, the best death dharma is the one that you're really familiar with. It isn't necessarily anything very grand and exalted. It's much better than that you have something that you've just relied on that you can actually do under extreme circumstances. But one way to practice is just you completely let go. You just are that open field of awareness, and that metta-full field of awareness, and that absence of clinging and craving will lead to something very beneficial from then on.
Just like I ask, the question was more, what is the rebirth aspect of that experience?
I don't know. It was more just, what do you do at that next? What's the next?
What's the deepening of that experience?
Yeah. But it sounds like actually it just staying with that experience, and that's what leads to eventually. And I suppose just sitting is crucial, because it's easier to just sit with that experience than just sitting, than it is if you're out wanting a biscuit and
Yeah, well, just sitting on a cushion is training for just carrying that on. It's like we tend to feel, okay, I just sit and I completely relax, and then, oh, now it's time for supper, so, or I've got to wash up, and so we kind of gear ourselves up for the next thing. And so there's a difference between this kind of relaxed, doing nothing, being nobody on our cushion, and then we sort of turn into being somebody, and we kind of feel like we got to sort of generate a certain kind of different way of being in order to go into activity. One of the things that I saw more and more clearly during the long retreat in France is that I didn't need to gear myself up to do anything. I didn't need to, sort of produce a special kind of self in order to go into activity. I could just get up in the same state and just carry on, just relaxed, and I did things. It all just happened. It was fine. And that whole kind of, production number that I did, of going into activity, I didn't need to do. It was all, it could all be done in a relaxed way. So the aim isn't just to be able to sort of sit on the cushion in a relaxed, aware state for forever. The aim is to bring together the life of calm and the life of activity so that you're full on, doing a busy life, but there's no tension, there's no resistance. You're quite relaxed with it. Just, it's no different. Again, still there's this big open awareness in which everything can happen, and that can be when there's nothing to do, you very happily do nothing. When there's something to do, you do that. It's kind of what Bhante's trying to get at with this mandala of greater awareness, greater mandala of complete uselessness teaching. He says within all our activity, all our to-do list should happen as kind of within, in one small corner of that greater mandala of complete uselessness. Now you either take it that he's saying that, we should spend, 15 hours a day just painting pictures and gazing at the landscape and, do everything in the other 5% of the time, which doesn't seem quite right, or you take it that what he's saying is that it's possible, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's possible to go through a whole kind of busy day just with that same kind of open attitude, just open to life, relaxed, easy. And if we're not clinging on, if we're not resisting and grasping, it is possible. It is possible. So that's where we're aiming to get to. And for me, even just having that as a possibility, not taking it for granted that I've got to get geared up, I've got to get wound up, even that helps. Yeah? Even having that sort of vision that, so I've got to talk to 50 order members, all right, well, I'll just turn up and sit down and do something. Do I need to get all kind of, oh, I've got to talk to 50 order members in the room, it's got to be really good, and what should I say next? Even just seeing that possibility helps. Who's next? Matt DeGarda.
Two things really. There was a sense of visualising something above our heads.
Yeah.
And I must confess, I found that a bit difficult to relate to for some reason. But what came across much more strongly for me was just kind of opening up to this sense of the Buddha's mind, or the Buddha's consciousness. I think it's a really useful imagination. It's imagining that is something that's very close to you, although it usually seems distant. In this practice, you can imagine that it's very close. and that actually that's what your mind really is.
Yeah.
If only you could awaken to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I just want to say, I think for me that's what this fourth stage is about, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get into that much more spacious, open dimension. And if it helps to imagine something above your head in order to do that, well, that's fine. But if that doesn't work, then you do what works. It's the idea of things above your head. I think it's does connect in some ways to sort of energetic fields and things, but it's probably also partly sort of Indian culture, in as much as, you know, the top of your you devotion, you know, you rest your head on your teacher's foot, you know, that sort of idea that what's of value and sort of what you feel devotion towards is somehow placed above you. But yeah, you can have the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the pit of your stomach or in your heart or not do it like that at all, as long as you're getting closer to that sense that, yeah, you know, our mind is going to become the Buddha's mind, so let's get on with it. Let's just let that happen, however it can happen. Satchikant, do you have a question?
Yeah, I think it's just answered actually. I think I was basically sort of getting off the carousel a bit too quickly finished. And that response is just it's just answered it.
Okay. This thing about everything being awareness or everything being experience, it does really help with that sort of aesthetic awareness too. Even with looking at, well, I don't know if this helps anything, but in some of the tantric practices, you have the yidam in the centre of the practice, and they have a mandala. You know, they have not only, you know, like vajra walls and flames and things, but they have a kind of mandala palace, you know, maybe a bit like this, but made of jewels with, you know, jewel pillars and things. And then the yidam appears, you know, whoever it is, Vajrasattva or whatever in the middle. And it's understood that everything that you're visualizing is actually manifestation of the Yidam's mind. So the Yidam isn't just the figure of Vajrasattva sitting here. In a sense, everything is the Yidam. And so if you have this sense that, you know, everything is experience, it changes your relationship with things. It even changes your relationship with inanimate objects. It changes your relationship with, you know, what in the West we call dead matter. I'd sort of have a bit of a thing about the idea of dead matter, because, well, it's quite materialist, but it's the idea that when we start treating part of our experience as dead matter, given that that's an experience of mind, and mind is always alive and vibrant, when we start telling ourselves, well, that's that part of my experience is just dead, and although I agree it means something, you know, there's a difference between, you know, my knee and the gong, there's something about the emotional attitude that we take to things that we regard as dead matter that is really unhelpful. Yeah, it limits our sense of aliveness in our environment, in the situation. So appreciating that even when we're looking at, you know, a sort of metal pillar, that's an experience of mind. Yeah. Gives you a different kind of relationship to it. It gives you a different kind of relationship to your life.
Is it an experience of energy?
Well, you can also say that, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
Padmabodhini said, is it also an experience of energy? Yeah. So you can also see it in those terms.
Can I just make one little comment?
Yeah, and then we'll meditate.
Yeah. It's sort of in relation to what's been... You're sort of worked up to something, and that's what makes me... I just think it was interesting that when I was coming on this retreat, I felt the effect, just the fact I had made the decision to come.
Yeah.
And then very soon I thought, this is starting to have an effect. And and then it even worked the very day when I set him off, and I was making my beeline for the station for just so much time, not too much time. And then I thought, I must go to the toy shop. And I went there to get some bubbles. Mm. And then I got the bubbles, I came out, and then I thought, I need to get some balloons. Mm. I didn't know why, so I went back and got 3 balloons. Mm. And so apart from that, and I mean that was just because I was coming on this receptivity retreat, somehow it made me feel I had to listen.
Mm.
And then when I was on the train, I won't go into any detail, but I definitely saw, one, an angel, and two, some cherubs. Because I just saw much more deeply than I normally... I just somehow found myself taking the time to just see. And it was really interesting what I was seeing. So I just think it's interesting, actually, how just the fact that you're going to... We're connecting as believing, aspiring beings, and with the hierarchy as well, of, you know, of all I'm getting at, it has an effect. And somehow we create a chemistry, just the, you know, just this whole thing happening here, the interconnectedness, we actually create and make the possibility to become receptive. So it's interesting how if you just isolate and on your own, if you're not careful, you fall asleep to that sense of wonder. And in fact, it isn't it. There is a lot of miraculous phenomena about. But that's my little comment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take that with us into meditation.